Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up, as ITV posts a disastrous set of financial results, we discuss job cuts, shrinking budgets, and a crisis in commercial broadcasting. Also in the podcast...
I think Loaded and Wallpaper kind of just hived off parts of what Arena potentially could have done. It's to my regret that that happened, and I don't think it should have done.
We hear from Nick Logan, the most imaginative magazine man of his generation, about the collapse of Arena, the title he founded 22 years ago. Plus, is Russell Brand set for a return to the airwaves? And...
What surname is shared by the author of The Tao of Physics and the director of It's a Wonderful Life and Miss Gomez Christy Trimble?
Capra.
Capra is right. Your bonuses now are on...
Scandal at University Challenge as Corpus Christi is stripped of their title. We look at this and the rest of the week's TV news. This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now this week, Gordon Brown flew out to Washington to try and get a sprinkling of Barack Obama's brand of magic dust. Whether our panel is worthy of 17 standing ovations, however, only you, dear listener, can decide. Emily Bell is The Guardian's Director of Digital Content. Can you feel the magic, Emily?
I am brimful of magic, Matt.
Good. James Robertson is the Observer's media editor. Are you a hope and change man, or more prudence and responsibility?
Hope and change, I think, is the only safe bet, isn't it?
It certainly is. A mystery guest will be joining us later for our roundup of the week's TV news. But let's get this show underway.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on Guardian.co.uk.
Now, our main story this week is the grim news emanating from ITV, which reported a fall in pre-tax profits of 41% for the last financial year. The troubled broadcaster, whose TV ad revenue is down about 20% in the first quarter of 2009, said it was looking to save £155 million this year through a variety of cost-cutting measures. These include cutting 600 jobs across all of its businesses, as well as slicing £65 million from its £1 billion programme budget, and selling off Friends Reunited and the Freeview Operation SDN. Executive Chairman Sir Michael Grade said with these cuts, ITV would save almost a quarter of £1 billion by 2011. Now, none of this makes for very good reading. Just how big a pickle, Emily, is ITV in?
Well, it's hard to overstate how much trouble it's in. Its share price is now 23p. It has, I think, the renegotiation of a euro bond coming up, which is for about £90 million it's potentially got to find. It's got a pension deficit, which, according to varying estimates, is sort of anywhere from £300 million upwards. And it is in a market where there's simply any revenue that comes in through advertising is simply going to sap away in the next 12 months and maybe in the next 24 months and maybe even in the next 48 months. So it's sort of, it's in really, really dire straits.
So is this the end of Michael Grade's content-led recovery, do you think, James?
Well, it's got to be in jeopardy, hasn't it?
Because they're axing, you know, the Royal
yeah,
and...
Yeah, they've already axed countless, well, a few high profile. I say countless is a bit... they get the carried away. Yes, they've already axed half their TV shows. Yes. I mean, period dramas, all the things that... And we all talk about it all the time, I know, but all the things that ITV used to do well. I mean, it's Brideshead Revisited was ITV, wasn't it? And they've axed... They've already, before the results were announced, said they were going to axe a lot of those...
High-end
types of
stuff,
shows,
yeah.
So you do wonder, don't you?
Is this all a result of, can you trace all this back to the Charles Allen era, or is it, as Michael Grade says, just the economic downturn?
I don't think it's just the economic downturn. I think the economic downturn is a significant part of it. I think ITV is a classic case of where a good strategy poorly implemented is far more damaging than a poor strategy well implemented, because actually what Charles Allen and John Cresswell identified was that they needed to diversify their revenue streams. You know, tick, yes you do. They needed to be in digital. Tick, yes you do need to be in digital. And you need some sort of online, web-based play as well. Tick. You know, so the strategy, if you like, sort of rolled back 5 years, was sound. The implementation of it was an absolute horror show. So they bought Friends Reunited, which for a ludicrous price, which nobody, even at the time, thought they would ever be able to monetize or knit in with their content. So if you imagine they'd spent that money instead...
It was like a precursor of Royal Bank of Scotland and ABN AMRO.
Okay, so let's imagine in a fantasy land that what they'd actually spent that money on was digitizing more of their content and coming up with a kind of a video delivery system, a bit like the iPlayer maybe, you know, sort of that could, would have been a good idea.
But this is the problem. ITV are always...
PRTS, that was their revenue diversification. How well did that go? I mean, could have gone very well if they'd understood the market like
but
Sky.
But what is it with ITV that they just seem to be 5 years behind everyone else? And finally, they get dragged kicking and screaming. And so they've just come up with the ITV player now, you know, 10 years after they should have been first looking at it.
I think it's quality of management and inability to invest in the next thing. And I think they were trying to strategize into a market that they just genuinely didn't understand. And I think that they have come sort of spectacularly unstuck. And then I do think that there is this uniquely horrible market conditions and the TMS problem.
What's the TMS problem?
Too much stuff.
Oh, right.
I was thinking
of Test Match Special, but that's not
the '50s and the '60s, the available resource in the advertising market defined how much commercial TV, that and sort of spectrum availability. Now spectrum availability is kind of infinite. Actually, it's got to be defined by how much ad resource there is. And there is not enough ad resource to support the amount of TV that we make in this country at the moment, which is sad. But when you look at something like, you know, Red Ridings on Channel 4 this week, you know, a spectacularly brilliant execution of quite a difficult sort of trilogy of you know, books from the UK author. Brilliant. That's exactly what we should be doing. But you kind of think this is sort of, there's so much bandwidth now that has to be filled.
Well, there was this particular point was picked up and debated on the blogs, of course, on Media Guardian this week. Black Thought said the recession is about removing the weakest companies who produce crap products, Woolworths being a prime example. The banks with their worthless derivative products also. ITV is a clear example of that. They make consistently awful programmes. The quality of their sports coverage is beyond appalling. Bakelite says, sell ITN, which is basically a valuable picture archive business with some expensive news programmes attached. Contract Sky to produce the news from ITV1. Desperate times, desperate measures, James.
Well, I mean, ITN, only, what did ITN make last year? £7 million. I mean, it's not going to cure ITV's problem. I think they will sell. I mean, they've been trying to sell it for ages. They only, what do they have? 40% stake. They don't even control it anyway. I just think no one wants to buy it, but it would make sense for them to get rid of it if they could.
So if the problem is not enough good programmes, cutting £65 million from the programme budget, that's not going to help that, is it?
No, well, I'm not saying it's not enough good programmes. I'm saying it's too many programmes, right, full stop, and actually probably kind of, you know, sort of that's across all platforms. That's not just ITV's problem. That's everybody's problem who's in the ad-funded business. So you do have to have consolidation. You know, you are going to have to get rid of at least one player out of the commercial market, maybe two. You know, that this is...
So is it the end of the line for ITV? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's... Well, it's,
well, not
well,
necessarily
well,
for ITV,
it already but... is the end of the line for ITV as we knew it. Yeah. You know, it isn't a regional-based public service broadcaster anymore.
But this is what, James, this is exactly what Michael Grade says, and they're living with the legacy of their monopoly past in a digital age. And it's a painful transition process.
Yeah, but they have got rid of a lot of their responsibilities already, haven't they? In terms of PSB, so and they will certainly lose more of them. So I mean, that's a bit of a red herring in a way. It's structural changes. Why is the media industry any different from any other industry? Yeah. If this was happening in any other industry, you would have consolidation. The only reason we haven't is because part of the reason we haven't is the regulation that.
Does it mean that it's the end as we know it for free-to-air commercial television? Do you think the only model is going to be subscription?
No, you can. There is. If you had one, for instance, one commercial giant controlling several terrestrial channels and a portfolio of five or six or seven digital channels, I think that's economically and commercially viable. So I don't think it is the end. But the point is, you can't have... I mean, look at Five. You talk about ITV, but Five is just...
Oh, it's another...
It's a complete
cases.
Mess. It's a complete mess. I mean, you just think if that continues for another year, it would, if it was an independent company not owned by a German giant parent company, it would just surely go bust.
All right, and there's loads more on all of this, of course, on mediaguardian.co.uk and all the developments as the story moves. We'll wrap that one there. To give us your thoughts, post a comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. I'm Matt Wells. You're listening to Media Talk. Still to come, as Arena folds after 22 years, we ask, what's the future for the high-concept, high-fashion men's mag? And...
Last week on Dancing on Ice, there were high scores.
That gives her best, 22. lovely to watch.
It's good enough for Harry Hill, so we'll also poke fun at the Z-listers on Dancing on Ice. Before that, let's take a canter through some of the other media stories from the past 7 days. Let's start with you, Emily, and one of your showbiz idols, Russell Brand. Talk Sporty Warty, I think we should probably call it.
I'm very disappointed by this because I would hope that he would be gracing the presence of Studio One here. Yes. Our magnificent new, you know, we must have at least as many listeners as Talk Sport these days.
We probably do. Not quite as much money, perhaps.
Well, I don't know, but I would imagine, given what's happened to radio revenues, we probably even there, if we have a whip round and empty our pockets,
we should probably come up with it. Do you think that the airwaves have missed Russell Brand, and do you think he'll be? Is he going to come back to even bigger and more celebrity fame?
I think he has a dedicated niche audience, which probably hovers around the 300,000 to 400,000. People, Mark, I think that, you know, that actually I don't know that you then come back to yet even more famous. I think there will be women from the ages of 18 to probably about sort of 64, 5, okay. 70 who may be tuning into Talk Sport for the first time in their lives.
one fallout from this, of course, from the Russell Brand affair was that this week it was announced that neither presenters nor their agents can executive produce their own show. But one interesting exception: Alison Cresswell can still continue to executive produce the Jonathan Ross show on BBC One.
Yes, well. You know, you make these rules to immediately have them broken. They made a rule many years ago on the BBC about none of their presenters writing columns in national newspapers.
Well, except for John Humphreys was allowed to continue.
Yeah, exactly. And then sort of Andrew Marr would pop up here, there, and occasionally everywhere. It's a good rule, though. I think that this idea that that you have this exec production company agent relationship. You know, the BBC's got to retain, particularly the BBC has to retain artistic control over its talent.
Malcolm Wall is leaving Virgin Media, the chief executive, set to go.
Who's next in there, do we think?
If he's going to be sold, I mean, why would you take the job?
Yeah, because they're going to sell off, you know, all the UK TV channels, aren't they?
They've still got stuff left, and they are still, you know, an offering. And do you know what? There are not many jobs in the media at the moment with the words chief and executive attached to them. There really aren't, and there are going to be even fewer.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about Ed Richards or Stephen Carter. No, I'm just making it up. It's not an entire surprise. And as you say, kind of this looks like a precursor to some kind of breakup and sale.
Sky have appointed a Twitter correspondent this week, James. Are you a Twitterer?
I do sort of by fortnightly, that's monthly.
Updates.
I just looked at my Twitter updates last week and I just hated myself. I just stopped doing it. You know, lunch at the Ivy, what recession was one, and then something about shrinking a Vivian Westwood jumper in the wash. And then when I realised that Emily was following me on Twitter, I don't know.
I was enjoying this kind of glamorous James, and I was thinking, God, he has, you know, my last update was about having to get rid of a dead mouse from the kitchen whilst the boiler broke, which is, I think that says everything about mine and James's
domestic bliss. But I just thought, if I carry on in this vein, I'm going to be, you know, be forced to take a pay cut.
That would be V-A-I-N rather than...
Yes, it's you'll be known as the office media twat, won't you?
I think
oh for the day when we only have one office media twat.
But why have they appointed plenty of those?
Why have they appointed a Twitter correspondent?
I don't know. It's the thing of the moment, isn't it? They want to get stories from it, I think.
Yes, but it is part of what we do. I mean, I think that Twitter's very useful, actually. I think it's good. It's blogging for old people because you don't have to have it. You have to have a very sort of low level of technical knowledge to be able to do it. But why would you want a correspondent looking at it? They should all be looking at it all the time.
Sky fail, that's what I say. In another part of the News International Empire, things are looking good for Rebecca Wade, we think.
I can't believe that they're going to give News International to Rebecca Wade to run.
What?
Is that a very politically incorrect thing to say?
A powerful woman running a media organisation, it wouldn't happen, would
that
it?
That is a good idea, and it works very well in the arenas about which I know. Well, I don't know. I just sort of think that I think that this is probably taken more seriously by people externally to News International than people internally. I think it is possible. I wouldn't be... I would be less surprised to see someone like Jeremy Darroch, currently chief executive of Sky, moving across both. I think
it's a bit
that
boring, though, isn't it?
But I think that they want boring. Not I think really. They want boring. You know, they want boring cost control at the top. You don't need a creative leader. I think Rebecca Way is doing a good job at the moment editing The Sun, which is currently sort of grinding the Mirror into price cut dust. Why would you? You know, seriously. I mean, why would you move her?
Yeah, I mean, they decided they should do this ambassadorial Les Hinton type role. That's more plausible, isn't it?
I think not running the company, but
going to number 10 and shaking hands.
And we haven't mentioned the sort of precursor to this story, which is, of course, this assumes that James Murdoch.
Yes. Well, we did that last week. We made those assumptions last week.
New read to start here. When James Murdoch goes to America to run part of the family business, will Rebecca Wade take his place?
Right,
will she take his place? No, it won't be life. Light replacement.
Okay, thank you very much. More on all these stories, of course, on mediaguardian.co.uk. Sad news for stylistas this week. The pioneering men's monthly magazine Arena, once the ultimate arbiter of men's fashion, is set to close after 22 years. Its publisher, Bauer Media, said it was suspending publication of the title with immediate effect. Arena, like The Face and Smash Hits, which have also fallen by the wayside, was the brainchild of Nick Logan. He came to the Media Talk studios earlier. I asked him how he felt about the demise of the last of his titles.
I think Loaded and Wallpaper kind of just hived off parts of what Arena potentially could have done. And it's to my regret that happened. I don't think it should have done. That kind of just squeezed the market. I think Esquire's always been a bit sick from the very beginning. But with GQ's kind of, you know, muscle and resources, they were the ones kind of blocking the path. And the other routes were kind of blocked off by Loaded and Wallpaper. And then all the people who followed in the footsteps of Loaded. And the market just became, you know, degraded and difficult, tough. For an independent publisher.
Is there any market for any kind of, you know, innovative, high concept, well thought out publication with the depth and breadth that those titles that you were involved in? Is there any market for that anymore?
I don't see it. So much of the stuff that the Face and Arena covered is just everywhere. It's just everywhere. It's all around you. It's in the magazines, you know, it's in the supplements, it's in the newspapers, it's on the internet, it's just everywhere.
There are a lot of innovative publications around today. You just need to walk into the Selfridges magazine section or specialist art shops, and there's all these big, bulky, beautifully designed publications. Aren't they in the same mould as the sort of things that you would do?
No, because they're magazines that could exist because, you know, someone in Malayan really loves them and will buy the advertising on the back page and, you know, inside front page. And again, I don't want this to sound too derogatory, but they're like parish magazines. And I always wanted The Face and Arena to get out there into the big world to get in Smith's, to be alongside other magazines, to have ABC figures, to circulation figures, to be subject to proper scrutiny as proper magazines. And when I think of kind of how that, you know, how much I had to think about that, and then 22 years later, you know, this is before metrosexuality and David Beckham and, you know, and 22 years later, you know, where I play tennis at my local gym in Essex, they've just refurbished the changing rooms, and on the wall is a giant picture of a torso of a male athlete. This is a men's changing room, male athlete, you know, the towel around his neck. It's a classic Arena pose, you know, and it's in an Essex men's changing room.
Nick Logan there, and you can hear more from that exclusive interview as your Media Talk Extra podcast this week. We talk about Nick's time at the NME, setting up Smash Hits, and how he's fallen out of love with the magazine industry. Head back to iTunes or go to the blog to find out how to get that. James Robinson, you strike me as an Arena sort of bloke. Were you?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I was quite into The Face when I was younger. You know, I was one of those sad people that had, you know, the first 5 years ring bound on my bookcase.
Yeah, but
there you go.
It was sort of smash hits for me.
I
think they might still all be in my, my old wardrobe.
I was a great fan of smash hits as well, but I mean, Nick's identified the problem. It's not so much the nipples on in FHM
it was the tyranny of the nipple.
The tyranny of the nipple. Yeah, I mean that's a factor because they saw all these big selling magazines and thought, why can't we sell that much? But I mean, it is about the mainstream embracing the sort of counterculture agenda, isn't it? That's what it's all about. And you see it in the supplements,
He said something really interesting there about he didn't think that independent, innovative publishers could do this anymore. And I noticed that Nick Denton the other week, who of course is a sort of entrepreneurial web publisher in the States with his Gawker Media stable, had merged a couple of his blogs, like sort of Gawker and Idolater, etc., saying, and Nick Denton's one for grand statement, said, the end of it is the end of micro publishing. And I think there's something very interesting in that, which actually is touched on by this, which one of the things that we will see from the next 2 years of recession is that entrepreneurial publishers, very sort of at a very low level, whether it's on the web or in paper, I think probably are going to completely disappear. I think after that you may sort of see a bit of a pickup, but you do wonder whether that is something that's sort of gone forever.
Nick Logan mentioned metrosexuality, and isn't the real legacy of Arena is that metrosexuality is mainstream now?
Absolutely. When you've got lads going down the pub after the football in nice scarves.
Vivian Westwood jumpers.
That jumper has shrunk so much it will now fit my 2-year-old nephew. I'm passing it on to the next generation of metrosexuals.
Bags all round.
There has been a cultural change, hasn't there? Men generally care more about the way they look and the way they dress.
And that's all down to magazines like that. It's a shame, isn't it, that there's just not those kinds of he's a very mercurial guy. When he came into the Guardian this week, I was struck by how kind of shy he was. Mm. This is the guy that revolutionised the magazine industry and launched Dylan Jones's career. It's extraordinary.
Don't blame him for that.
He worked with James Brown. And in fact, he was last seen disappearing out with our own Richard Williams as he exited the building, or former enemy.
There we go. That's the old rocker access.
We've got a former Arena editor on the Observer, haven't we, as well? Catherine Fletch.
I think that those people now, the Nick Logans now, are probably web based. I think they are probably sort of entrepreneurial in a slightly different area.
It's all on the web. Now.
It is my answer to
everything.
Paper is going to make a big comeback.
That's an original thought.
There are lots of those the magazines you mentioned, Matt, when you go in and see those big, huge, fashion mags and stuff. They are essentially vanity products, aren't they? But they're still going to adorn. They're coffee table books, really, aren't they? They're not commercial. They're not proper magazines.
No, and that's what Nick Logan said. He was into getting his stuff on the shelves of WH Smith's. Anyway, there's more of that interview. Very interesting stuff online if you're into that sort of thing. If you've got something to say about this, post your comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk.
Matt Wells, Media Talk on guardian.co.uk.
Thank you very much to Paul Robinson for organising that fabulous and very topical new ident for us. Do you think that was the real...
It was nice. Can we get...
Roger Tilling.
Can we get Russell Brand to do something similar for us?
Roger Tilling. He's much more in and now than Russell Brand, don't you think? Stephen Brooke, who's our mystery guest, who's joined us. How are you, Stephen?
I'm fine. I was going to say that sounded incredibly shouty for a Guardian podcast, but perhaps that's the way that we're moving now.
Well, obviously we can calm things down for this part. We're not going to be lively. We're just going to be...
No, I'm going to step up to the plate.
We can be NPR if you
like. No, I'm going to be outraged. What do you want me to be outraged about?
Well, I want you to be outraged. Are you as angry as Bamba Gascoigne about the fiasco on University Challenge?
I'm absolutely outraged. Yes. And in fact, I've gone through several gradations of outrage back and forth as that extraordinary story unfolded, because of course everybody, I actually do watch University Challenge.
How many questions do you get right every episode?
Well, I was actually away for the big final. I was watching it at
work.
Don't
touch the question.
Which was a big... I actually probably get about three right.
Okay.
I get about 10% right, I think. I get about a dozen.
It's very cathartic when I do get it, though. But how many of you get it right and before the...
I don't know about that.
The person actually hits the buzzer, because that's what it's all about. It's not sitting in your... lounge room and saying, oh yes, that's Jimmy Carter, about 5 seconds after they've actually got to that.
Anyway,
see, so speed is of the essence in these.
Yeah, so going back to the story,
Trimblegate, I was calling it. I'm just appalled that that didn't catch on in The Guardian.
But was it a BBC overreaction?
Or
are you a rules is rules man?
Well, it's funny. Rules is rules. If I was pitching this to you, I'd say, Matt, I've got this great quiz. It's about university students, and they compete against each other for a trophy. Sounds simple. Sounds good. What's the problem with that? Oh, it turns out that actually half the contestants haven't been university students.
One this year and several last year.
This has been going on for quite a while. And then I think, well, if people wanted to kick up a big fuss about this over the coming weeks, if the BBC hadn't acted, then they may well have.
Who cares?
You know what's about what they should do? What I would like to see is them banning postgraduates, because that's really unfair. I mean, they've got a 45-year-old.
No, it's not.
It bloody is.
No, because when
you're 21... or 18 to 20, you don't know much. And you've got some 45-year-old
And you should not be on prime-time telly. I want to see more old people.
I think who cares is right, but then my question back is, why couldn't the BBC organise a quiz show with university students in it who happen to be university students? Why is that so difficult?
They film it over the summer, so they do one part before the summer and one part after.
Yeah, exactly.
It practically makes it impossible for final year students to take part.
So why the BBC schedulers in their wisdom decided they've got to have a bit at the start of the year and then a bit later on. Why the gap?
Well, maybe students are actually meant to be working as their... burning taxpayers' money in their libraries.
I hope that everyone here is in full-time employment at The Guardian and The Observer, otherwise we'll be in trouble.
Yeah.
Just enough to see my visa.
I think you'll find we're an integrated news organisation.
I was going to say,
we all work for everybody all the time.
All three platforms.
Are your visa...
Is your visa in this case.
Is your visa in order, Stephen?
Actually, I can say truthfully, I don't have one.
Are you an illegal immigrant?
Scandal. There you are.
Let's move on. Do you want to stick up for... who wants to stick up for Law & Order UK? Are you...
You're looking around. Hopefully, I will. I didn't hear your podcast last week because I was away, but I did watch Law & Order on Monday, and I thought very good. I thought it was engrossing, and I thought that the plot was quite interesting. I liked the London setting. I thought they'd done a very good job transplanting what is such an American program. To they even had a scene that was set in Holloway N7, which is round the corner from where I live.
It must be good.
So, well, I will watch it. I will watch it again.
We're not going to have our little conversation again, are we?
No, we're not. No, I thought it was Tesco's. I liked Moving Wallpaper.
Yes, I watched that too. Yeah. Another ITV.
I know, two ITV shows in 1 week that are quite... We spent the first half of this podcast saying how crap ITV was, and now we've realised they've got a couple of good shows.
I don't think they are crap. Whitechapel was good, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know.
Moving Wallpaper, is that thing that's come back?
Yes. The comedy, yes.
I was the only person who liked it last time round, and I was bullied by people like you into not watching it.
That's good. Very good. Very good.
You know, it's
very postmodern, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very postmodern. It's come back, but without Echo Beach. And I quite like the way they dealt with the axing of... Echo Beach.
Which actually was utterly true to life, wasn't it? What was the joke? They got rid of the director of television and got that guy in from the BBC who messed up the Queen.
Did they say their share price was at 23.5p?
They couldn't afford to make
any more programmes.
The share price wasn't mentioned, but I think that'll be in next week's episode. Are you following Dancing on Ice?
Oh, yes.
Who's your favourite?
I've revealed that I actually have done something on the weekend that I've never previously done before, which I actually voted on that show. I couldn't believe it. And the reason that I voted...
Did you vote off Holly Willoughby?
That was an option that was not given to me, regretfully. No, I voted for the journalist guy, Donal, because I'd watched it...
Oh, he's rubbish.
Well, he was rubbish, but he has suddenly got very good. Did you see him with his...
No, funnily enough, I didn't...
With
I
his
didn't
prop this week, which
what
I'd,
was his prop? Was it a broom?
He had the broom.
James has watched it as well.
Was it a disguise?
No, each.
See, because he did have this thing at the beginning, which was his boring shtick about, I've been into prisons and I've tracked down gangland bosses and I've never been as scared as I have been dancing on ice. Now he's just dropped it, and as the head judge, Robin, what's his face, said... he performed beautifully on the ice.
I just love the idea of him. This has been his problem now for about the last decade, yeah. which is being an undercover investigative reporter.
The world's most instantly recognisable undercover reporter.
Yeah. And of course, they do have their own John Sargent figure, which is Colleen Nolan,
who is
an advert for everything that's worse about modern Britain.
I thought it was EastEnders bloke.
They had quite a few of them.
Well, they had Todd Carty and Colleen, but Colleen's still in it.
Stephen, you just said Colleen was an advert for everything that is worst about modern Britain.
Yes.
Oh, come on.
I cannot believe that you said that.
I'm saving you from yourself, Stephen.
Yes.
Righto. We should wrap up with a new segment, Brookie's Box Sets. What's on your recommendation?
Seeing that I'm the 1 week only TV reviewer,
we might have you back next week if Gareth McLean's still in.
All right, fair enough. Okay, seeing we've had a quiz theme, I was going to run through what TV series am I. This is the box set that I've been watching most recently.
Okay. Is this
Things
a quiz?
On the buzzers.
Oh, okay.
No. This is to lead into the discussion,
okay.
Matt.
Right.
Okay. Whisper Quiet Drapes, The Double R Diner, Audrey.
World at War.
No. Cherry Pie, Log Lady, Wrapped in Plastic.
Desperate Housewives.
Who Killed Laura Palmer?
Twin Peaks.
Yes, Twin Peaks, the 1990 ABC sort of murder mystery.
Yeah.
Of course, what you always want to know when you watch an old TV series is, does it stand up to the test of time? And I think with Twin Peaks, surprisingly well, because it's this sort of, at the face of it, it's this lush sort of 1950s melodrama in this small town USA, but suddenly it's revealed that everyone's a sexual deviant and David Lynchian, you scratch the surface, foul murders, and plots are sort of a bit haywire and it's very slow, but because it's done in such a good style, I found that it completely held my attention to the extent that when I did switch off and go to bed late at night, I was fearful that when I got from the lounge room to my bedroom, Killer Bob would have met me and axed me to death.
I tell you what's been doing that to me is Being Human. I'm not sure if anyone has seen this vampire ghost and werewolf series. Still available for about three more days on. It's the best thing that's been on BBC Three for years.
Really? That's quite a low bar, isn't it?
It's really good. Very good and very scary. That's my recommendation of the week.
It's
fabulous.
I thought it was a comedy. Bobbins,
it is a comedy. And
a scary comedy. A dark comedy.
It gets darker as the series progresses. That's my recommendation of the week. Thank you.
And nothing is good. I found, being this TV reviewer for half a week, nothing is good unless it's dark.
Yeah, dark is good. That's your lot for this week, listeners. To have your say in any of our topics, go to guardian.co.uk/mediatalk or search for us on Facebook. My thanks to Emily Bell, James Robinson and Stephen Brook for showing us how it's done this week. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. See you again soon. Goodbye.